Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Delta Flyers. We are a weekly podcast that discusses episodes of Star Trek Voyager in chronological order. Your two hosts along this podcast journey are myself, Garrett Wong, a.k.a. Ensign Harry Kim, and Robert Duncan
McNeil.
Who portrayed Lieutenant.
Gave you a little echo there. Just Lieutenant. He portrayed Lieutenant. Look, it's the Lieutenant.
It's the Lieutenant.
Exactly.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Oh, we're extra rambunctious. Who portrayed Lieutenant Tom Paris? If you're interested in either an extended version of this podcast or the extended video version of this podcast, both of which include added bonus awesome segments, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/thedeltaflyers and sign up today to become a patron.
Yes, do that. And you get video, audio, bonus features, and you get the Lieutenant. And you get the cheese. You know in that episode where they were like, get the cheese to sick bay. Everybody loved, like, that's the winner. That is the winner of all time. The cheese to sick bay.
I know. That was a great line.
Yeah.
And I think that the Lieutenant should be the name of your autobiography.
Yes. Yes. The Lieutenant.
The Lieutenant.
The Robert Duncan McNeil story. The cheese.
Oh my gosh. Hey.
I want the cheese to be my autobiography.
You're gonna go life story. The cheese?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. We'll have a
the cheese.
We'll have a photo of you eating cheese on the cover or yeah?
Yeah, I think so. Or just a big like pile of cheese.
Just a big pile of cheese. Yeah. And people can kind of interpret that how they see fit.
However you want.
I love that.
Everybody's got a little cheese story in their life, I think.
Well, I think that's pretty darn awesome.
Okay, enough about the cheese.
All right, enough about the cheese. Anything else new that you want to chat about right now? Or should we just
Let's just go right into this.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So if you don't already know our format, what we are about to do is we're about to play a game of What Do We Remember? And that is for our Patreon patrons. And for everyone else, if you just stay tuned, Robbie and I get to go and rewatch Non Sequitur. And we'll come back and give you guys our 2 cents worth on that. So thank you guys. And we'll be right back.
All right. See you in a minute.
Welcome back, guys. Robbie and I are done watching Non Sequitur.
Yes, we are. Okay. We certainly are, Mr. Harry Kim.
Now, you know.
The Harry Kim show, I see. The whole crew had the episode off. What do you mean, like, oh, I don't remember because I had the episode off? Everybody was off. Yeah. Nobody worked except you and my buddy Mark Kiley, who I totally forgot was in this episode.
Mark Kiley and I.
I knew Mark. Yeah. I just talked to Mark a week or two ago.
Yeah.
Mark has not been acting for many years. He moved back to Rhode Island. So Mark played Lieutenant Laska, mm-hmm. I think.
Yep.
And Mark was one of my best friends in the world. He worked with me and helped me make a couple of short films. And we started an acting co-op, this theater group together. Anyway, so Mark is back in Rhode Island where he grew up, living there, is raised 3 boys back there, and he's a swim coach, and he's a very successful swim coach, like competitive swimmers, and lives in Rhode Island, and he's loving life. And I just talked to him like 2 weeks ago, probably.
That's great.
Yeah, that's crazy. I totally forgot he was in this episode. So
wow.
Anyway, that's Mark Kiley.
Well, I'm going
to so many things to talk about in this.
Yeah, episode. Yeah. I'm going to say off the bat, I'm a little jealous of your relationship that you had with Mark Kiley. You just told me he was your best friend back then.
Oh, like, well, really? Speaking of best friends, so you kept talking about, let's see, what was his name? Danny Bird? Oh, really? Oh, Danny, my best friend, Danny Bird. I heard Danny Bird one more time.
We don't even see Danny Bird. We don't even know what Danny Bird looks like.
No.
All right. We always start off with a plot synopsis in the beginning for those of the people.
Do you have a haiku
out there? I have a haiku for this
one. Let me do the messy sloppy one.
You can do the messy sloppy one. I do want to tell you.
Yes.
One of the notes from Jesse, our editor, was that it would be super cool if you did another poetry slam thing where you just sort of like riffed, you know, instead of
just like make it up,
just sort of like, you know, riffed right along with it, you know, and then not did the long meandering one, and then I did my haiku. that was the notes for. I'm being perfect.
All right, honest, let me see if I can just riff something.
Just riff it. Yeah.
Yo, Harry Kim doesn't know where he's at. He wakes up in the morning and has a little spat with Libby, his fiance. We didn't even know her. What happens next? I'm gonna show ya. He goes to Starfleet and doesn't know about the ship. He doesn't even know where he's living in. So then he figures out he went in a time slip and has to find his way back with his best buddy, Tom Paris. Something like that.
Bravo.
I mean, I was trying to wrap it out. I feel like
that's good enough.
I don't know.
Hey, I went with it. I was with you. I supported you 100%.
It wasn't my best. I didn't know you were going to throw this at me.
No, but now that you know this, you're going to be prepared next time. Or you will improve.
I don't know if my rap is going to get any better. It's just.
It's
not my strength. And I get self-conscious.
Okay, if you don't want to put it in rap presentation form, you could also just do spoken word where you just sort of, you know,
maybe I could do like Patrick Stewart does his sonnets.
He you could do a sonnet description of
or maybe I'll do it in an old redneck country hillbilly story, which is really closer to my roots. Anyway, I'll work on that. This is not for you guys in the audience to worry about.
Right. Okay? Right. Sure. If you want to take a sort of a Mark Twain, you know, kind of approach to it, you know,
kind of
folksy American thing, go right ahead.
Okay.
So my haiku, and just to remind everybody, it's 5 syllables, 7 syllables, and then 5 syllables. So there's only 3 lines to the poem, right?
Yes.
So for non sequitur, the non sequitur haiku is Kim wakes up at home. It's not his reality. Paris saves the day.
Oh, I like the ending.
You like that?
I like the ending. I like the ending a lot.
You love that.
Danny
ending.
Bird. It's not Danny Bird didn't save the day. Did he? No.
Are you jealous of Danny Bird? Oh my gosh.
I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not going to say jealous.
Okay.
I'm going to say competitive. Annoyed.
Competitive or annoyed?
Yes. Annoyed and competitive with Danny Bird, who doesn't even exist.
If I say AC, you will never think of it as air conditioning. You will think AC is annoyed and competitive from now on.
Got it. AC.
All right. Okay.
Okay. Let's go.
Let's do this, puppy. The teaser. Harry wakes up in bed and we see.
How many times have we started an episode with this screaming close up of your face? By the way, you looked about 12 years old. You look so young. I was like,
that's the Asian.
God.
That's the way it works, though, right? So
it kind of supposed to work for Irish people, too. Like,
no,
what I got, but not the same.
Sorry, it's not for white people. It's only people of color. Yeah. We look younger than, you know, we our true ages. That's just
you look like a baby.
Oh, God. I know. I was already 25 old, though. I was at least 25 at that point when we filmed that. So 25 or 26. Okay. All right.
So you wake up.
I wake up in the bed. Well, first of all, girl. I just want to say, Brannon, he didn't make the choice. Brannon Braga wrote this. He didn't make the choice of making it Libby Chen. You know what I'm saying? It was Libby, the non-Asian girlfriend, which I thought, hey, that's nice, right?
That's great.
Because Hollywood tends to always... you know, when you see a commercial and you see a family, if it would be usually a uniform ethnic family. It's a black father, a black mother.
I think that's changing, though.
But not then, 1995, you did not see Asian men with a girlfriend who was not Asian or a wife that who is not Asian. You didn't see that,
yeah.
Right? So that was huge. I didn't think twice about it because that had basically been the pattern of my life growing up in Memphis, Tennessee in an all-white neighborhood, going to a predominantly pretty much all-white junior high, grade school, junior high, high school. I was used to being attracted to Caucasian women because that's the only women that were around me except for my mother and sister who are Asian, but I'm not dating either my mother or sister.
I don't think you should, but maybe in Memphis you can do that. Maybe. That may be legal. I don't know. I've been
Did
to Memphis.
Did you just alienate all of our Memphis listeners now? They're just everybody in Tennessee is like,
listen, I've already said I'm a hillbilly redneck from the, okay. from North Carolina. Okay. So
all right.
No, I was just making a joke.
But. Okay. That's just Robbie joking. Y'all don't get all, you know, don't get all bent out of shape, y'all. Don't worry about Robbie McNeil. He's one of you. Don't worry.
That's right. All right. So yes, you wake up in a biracial relationship, which is progressive for the time, much more common now.
Yes. Let's talk about Jennifer Gotti for a second. The actress that plays Libby. She played an HIV positive character on Young and the Restless, Keisha Monroe, which is pretty big. She also did another more soap opera work. She had done TNG, Birthright parts 1 and 2 of Next Generation right before she did. So she had some, you know, some Trek experience already.
Right.
She was in a Bon Jovi music video for the song Runaway. That was another thing that she did. So she has a nice resume. It's got a lot of different things on there.
Is she still acting? Do you know?
Yeah, her last credit was 2019. So yeah, it looks like she's still acting. So she didn't go off and become a swim coach like Mark Kiley did. No. Written by Brandon Braga, directed by David Livingston. Cosimo's Coffee Shop. Do you think that had any influence from Cosimo Genovese? Yes.
I think I had the same thought. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right.
I think so.
I think so too. That makes the most sense, right?
Yeah. So you look out the window, you're in San Francisco, we go to the credits, we come back and you're like, what the F is going on, right? So you're all confused. But I got to say, in your morning confusion, dude, even when you wake up in bed with a girl that's half naked, you don't seem to want to be around the half naked girl. I was like, Harry, you've been in the Delta Quadrant. Yeah, sure, it's a little confusing, but like, what? You just woke up with this girl who's like giving you the googly eyes, the morning Google. And instead you're like, actually, I take it back. She was pushing you to go to work. She was kind of like, come on, go, you got to get to work. She was pushed. So I'm not going to blame you for it.
No.
Okay.
Well, you know what it reminds me of? You know, there's the, it was Monty Python and the Holy Grail, I think. And in that film, there's that scene where this knight goes into this castle and it's just filled with these beautiful women all inside this castle, and this other knight comes to save him, and he's like, I'm here to save you. And he's like, save me from what? He's like, the peril. And he's like pointing at all these women, and he's like, oh well, I don't really need saving from the peril. And he's like, no, I'm here to save you from the peril. And he's pulling him out of the castle. And so it's so really, you're right, Harry's always running from the peril,
from the peril. Yeah, it was a really hot peril in your bed, and you decided to go take a shower.
Did you notice when she's talking to me and she's standing at the that island in the kitchen?
Yeah.
Notice what she's wearing. She's wearing this kind of this shirt, and it's sort of sheer. It's horizontal stripes, but it's sheer. And then later in the office, there's a picture of Libby and Harry is wearing that shirt in the photo. So.
Oh, so she was wearing
his shirt. Wearing my shirt, exactly.
I didn't know Harry wore see-through shirts, though.
Well,
that's a little...
That That's a Bob Blackman thing. Okay. Yes. So this is,
we all had to wear some questionable outfits.
Yes. Bob Blackman is a, I think he's an award-winning costumer, or what would you call
theater
him?
Costume. Yeah, yeah. Costume designer.
You name it. But let's just face it. When it came to us, the men on the show, he would sometimes come up with some very provocative looking pieces of wardrobe and sort of say, hey, this is what you're going to be wearing in this episode. And me taking a look at that, I thought I would wear this if I was in maybe West Hollywood going out and do, you know, I don't know. It was really very borderline, like, this is really not what Harry would wear. You know what I'm saying? So,
Okay. So you pass the neighborhood restaurant, Cosimo's.
Cosimo's.
Which I had the same thought, named after our script supervisor, Cosmo Genovese, who was on Star Trek for many, many years, just passed away last year. Yeah, Cosmo was an awesome guy. And I'm sure that they probably named the restaurant or the character after him.
Definitely.
Lieutenant Laska shows up, my buddy Mark Kiley, like I said.
Yeah.
As you guys walk towards the subway or whatever, you were sort of arm in arm. And I was like, that's an odd way for guys to walk to a subway. And I wondered, not that you would remember, but I'm like, I feel like maybe the director, David Livingston in this case, maybe said, hey, Mark Kiley, grab him by the arm, and you're sort of dragging him because he's confused and doesn't know what to do. And I'm sure that was probably a direction, but it just seemed odd to me that you guys walked down the street to the subway arm in arm.
Did it look like we were off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz?
A little bit, yeah. Okay. It looked like you were sort of hooked together and here we go. I don't know. There was something a little... Sometimes, and I have a couple other places in this episode where this is true.
Yeah.
And I think Star Trek is guilty of this more than most shows, because Star Trek sometimes can be slightly stylized.
Okay.
The directors would sometimes give us very specific direction that maybe they think tells a story or fits the shot. I think often it would be like, stand like this, or stand, or hold your hand here, or something.
Right.
And it just feels very self-conscious and awkward. And that was one of those, I would imagine that was the direction that you guys got. I can't imagine you and Mark both going, hey, let's...
Exactly. No, we're not going to do the arm in arm thing, but you're totally right about that. There have definitely been times where directors will tell us, hey, try this sort of blocking or this type of movement. But they think about that movement in their head. They don't actually physically go through that movement themselves. Yeah. And it ends up being really awkward for all of us. Right. So,
yeah. Okay, so you go to Starfleet to make a presentation, which you have no idea what you're supposed to present.
Every time I watch that scene, I just squirm, because it's sort of like, it's so, how awkward is that? Here you are, you know, you're in this reality where you have no clue what you have been doing. You know what I'm saying? And then now you have to do this presentation on this runabout and this new warp core or whatever. And it's just embarrassing, and just watching that scene just makes me cringe every time. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, it's awkward. I mean, I think it's successful because it's supposed to be awkward.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be lost. And you know, when he goes, are you feeling sick? And you're like, yeah, that's it. I'm feeling sick.
Yeah.
Like, he's just trying to figure out a way out of this.
To get out of it. Yeah.
To get out of it and figure out what's going on. And he does that. He goes into his office, which is a really nice office. By the way, you've got some awards up on the wall. You got the Cochrane... What did you get? The Cochrane Medal of Warp Achievement or something? And you're 8 months out of the academy? Like, I think you say in here, it said, you're only out of the academy 8 months ago. That would be like, I don't know what. It's pretty incredible.
Are you finally learning about the incredible genius of Harry Kim?
Harry Kim. And here's the other genius. When he's locked out of the Voyager thing, he goes, well, wait a minute, I've got the access codes because it should work,
right?
Which it does. So it that does. Was good thinking, you know?
That was pretty cool. Yeah. I'm just going to rewind a little bit before the office. When I walked into the meeting with the Starfleet brass, the first thing that Megan said was, they shouldn't have given you shoulder pads, you look like a triangle.
So
her comment of they shouldn't have given you shoulder pads made me laugh, because we all look like triangles if you think about it. We all had big shoulder pads.
Yeah.
So that was just common. It wasn't like I was the only shoulder padded person. No. Everyone had the shoulder pads.
Everybody had them on next gen. Yeah. Next Gen Outfits had them. Yeah.
And they connected. Yeah. Do you remember how they connected our shoulder pads inside our uniform?
Yeah. They snapped them. There was like a little snap.
Beep, little snap. Two snaps. There you go. In the office, when you see, so back again, you see that picture of Harry and Libby. Harry's wearing the shirt, that, the same shirt that Libby is wearing during breakfast. But also when he pulls up his file, Harry Kim's record on screen, you see it says Harry's name. It says Harry S period L period Kim. I just got a note from Megan. It says, it was your body type specifically. You have no hips. Okay. Always good to have your significant other pull you back down to reality.
Always good to, yes. Get some cue cards.
Yeah, some cue cards.
So tell Megan if she's got any cue cards for me, just to, you know, DM me or something.
Megan, if you have any cue cards for Robbie, just DM him. Okay.
Thanks.
Now, back to the name. Did you catch that? Harry S.
I didn't.
L. Kim?
What is that?
That's his middle initials.
Yeah, but what does it stand for? Did you ever find it out?
No, because I've seen it before in my quarters. Maybe I just saw it on the wall, some type of like presentation or some type of certificate on the wall. Yeah, I made up my my own, you know.
Your middle initials?
Yes.
What does it stand for? What do you think it stands for?
Harry S. L. Kim. The S. L. to me, back in 1996, I said, well, you know, it's got to be sushi loving.
Oh, yeah.
I was really into sushi then. So I said, hey, Harry, sushi loving Kim, you know.
Yeah.
But obviously, supposed to be
McLovin. So. You were McSushi loving.
I was the original.
Back in the McLovin, day, you were the original McLovin.
McLovin. Yeah. So that's an interesting trivia fact that maybe Brandon would know what they decided. I'm guessing it's some type of, you know, some Asian, you know, middle name or something.
Yeah.
I mean, what else could it be? S. Stephen Lawrence, Sherwood.
It's a mystery.
Yeah, we don't know. We'll never know. We also know that Harry lives on the fourth floor, apartment 4G, according to Cosimo. But if he wakes up from his, you know, little thing in the very beginning of the episode and he looks out, that view does not look like the fourth
floor.
Looks like
you're on the 50th floor.
That looks like the 54th floor, yes.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a little bit weird.
When you go back in, Libby comes out in a towel.
She's in a towel, yeah.
I gotta say, this scene made me uncomfortable.
Really?
I know what the intention was like to get you guys the foreplay going, but this is another scene where I would say the direction probably was, David Livingston, the director of this episode, probably said, oh, I want to do this all in one long, slow pushing.
That's what
no
he said.
No coverage, right?
That's what he said.
So you had to hit these marks nose to nose and then just basically for 2 pages or whatever, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, you just sat in the same position and talked, and it was clear that it was foreplay and everything. But as a director in my life now, I think that's an interesting idea, but watching it in execution felt more uncomfortable. I would have let you guys be more playful and silly.
Agreed.
And fall back and get some coverage and
Agreed.
let the scene build, because it was, the words were fighting against the shot and the kind of static of this shot.
Yeah.
And the fact that there weren't any cuts, I was like,
yeah,
it's not sexy because it's just sort of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it's not your performance. That's not what I'm saying. It was so clear. Like she says, well, you know, Harry, is there something I can do to help you relax? Mm-hmm. In my towel? I mean, it's so clear what's going on that it would have been, I think, more effective to be more playful and to have.
I 100% agree with you. And this is probably a caveat or a lesson to all you aspiring directors out there. Don't get so locked into one particular shot that you have in your head and thinking that this is the end all be all, because literally we did 17 takes of that.
Oh, shot. I bet you did.
That's slow look, because it didn't, you know, according to David, the certain points that where the camera was supposed to be on the push in wasn't hitting the certain, we weren't at that point in the dialogue. He didn't like it. We did it again. And you're right. The playfulness would have been way better, because, you know, think about it. Harry's been totally out of whack. He doesn't know where the hell he is. He's just confused. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get it. How do you get him out of that? You know, you got to start maybe wrestling with him, tickling him. You know, if you're the significant other of Harry.
Coming around behind his back and holding him. And
exactly.
He should be sort of loosening him up. Yes. And he should slowly be sort of, you know. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. That to me, that scene, not your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Not a performance thing. It was all a function of this shot that was supposed to tell the story. And instead it told sort of an awkward story to me.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, because I honestly, whenever I've seen this, and I've seen this scene many times, this episode many times, mm-hmm. I've always felt very awkward when watching this, going, oh, there's something missing, or something is not, something's a little off about this. And you just saying what you said really puts it into perspective for me. Like, if you kept a little bit more movement instead of just this slow push into two talking heads the entire time, good Lord.
Well, we couldn't even see your eyes because you're facing each other.
That's
so
correct.
What we see is just a profile. So it's mm-hmm. like the audience is outside of this experience.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't, you know, imagine if I did the whole podcast like this. Do you know what I mean? Like, imagine if I just sat here the whole time.
I like that.
And I was like, wow, Harry, like, you don't feel it. You know what I mean?
No, you're so right.
You don't feel the expressions or the
right.
the changes in mood. And
oh, you're so right. So I just remember, number one, it was very hot. I mean, that set was just, it was lit up. The outside was supposed to be daytime for San Francisco. And it just, it was a really, really hot set, especially because we kept doing take after take after take after take. And the first few takes, I remember Jennifer Gotti, very tight-lipped, right?
Yeah.
But when we got more takes under our belt, Jennifer Gotti became more relaxed. And, mm-hmm. and myself as well, I became more relaxed too. Right. And I talk about this when I'm on stage at conventions. I've said this before. I said, take number 11 or 12, I thought that she was searching for my tonsils with her tongue. I mean, literally, it was like, oh my gosh. Because typically in television, when you have TV kisses, it's just more like kind of open your mouth and move it a little bit, but don't show any tongue, or don't go, you know, don't French kiss. Just do a, you know, more a TV appropriate kiss. But by take, you know, like I said, 9, 10, 11, 12, by the time I got to 17, it was just hardcore, just making out. And it was sad, because I went home that night after filming, and I was dating the stand-in for Tracy. I was dating the stand-in for Jennifer Lean's, Jennifer Lean's character, Cass. And I remember kissing her that night and thinking, huh, Jennifer Cotti is a better kisser than my
That's not
girlfriend.
Good.
Al is not good That's at all. Not oh, good. It was horrible. So
I felt like, as an actor, if I did a scene where I was playing a bad guy and murdered someone or killed someone,
mm-hmm.
that's not, it's acting. It's just pretend.
Yeah.
And the same with kissing. Like, if I do a scene where I'm kissing someone, it's part of the pretend job that I'm playing.
Right. Okay.
And it never, for me, I never felt like, oh, I was somehow unfaithful, or I was, that was real. It just, for me, I don't know why, it never, and maybe that's just bad acting, a lack of commitment or something, but I always felt like,
okay,
I never struggled with that. I know a lot of actors do. And now, as a director, we actually are required now by the studios to present to the actors in writing ahead of time. It's called an intimacy agreement or something.
Uh-huh.
The director has to describe exactly what the shots are, describe exactly what the action is in the lovemaking scene or the kissing scene or the whatever it is, so that the actors are agreeable before they get on set. We didn't do this back in the old days. You just showed up and you figured it out. By showing up and figuring it out, it often left people who might be slightly uncomfortable with intimacy. And you have to do these now. The studios require it, that they sign off ahead of time so that they're comfortable, that everybody, both the actor and the actress or whoever is in the scene, are in agreement that here's the shots, here's what we will see, here's what we won't see. If someone's shirt is supposed to come off, we'll only see from behind, we won't see side boob, we won't blah, blah, blah. Right. You know, you get very specific, or if there's kissing, you know, that the kissing lasts X amount of time and it's this kind of kissing or whatever. You have to describe all that so that everybody's comfortable, because there are people who aren't, who feel like it's a real kiss on some level or something. For me, that never was the case, but for some people it is. And so I think it's good now that they have these intimacy clauses or intimacy agreements that we make.
Well, Hollywood's come a long way, because that's definitely not the way it was when we were filming.
No.
And I think it's probably better. It's yeah, better to have
it is better.
This dialogue before you go, you get on the set, and it's in writing and you know exactly what you're expecting to, what is expected of you, and it's there. So good job that they
did. Yeah.
Oh, we see the clarinet. The clarinet makes its debut.
That's in the morning, right?
Yeah.
Or no, in the middle of the night when you wake up.
Right. In the middle of the night.
So I got to say, when you,
it's after
when
the nookie.
After the nookie, there's a little time transition, and you kind of sneak out of bed. And I kept thinking as you got out of bed, it looked like such 80s music video lighting. I kept wanting like Tears for Fears to be playing, or, you know, like Wham or something.
Everybody wants to rule the world.
Something, yeah.
I could have had that.
Duran Duran, something, you know. Aha, maybe aha, aha,
aha. Oh,
a little aha music as you got out of bed and went over. It was so 80s looking music video. It was funny.
I'm going to throw a random weird story right here because you brought up aha. years ago, I was in the Ukraine and I was visiting a gal that I was seeing at the time. And so then her girlfriend said, hey, on Friday night, we're going to go with the general, like this guy that her girlfriend was dating, to his summer home thing. And I said, okay. So we get into this car and we drive out to the countryside. And it was a really lavish summer home, because this guy was a general in the military, basically. And after dinner, which was this huge spread, we decided, or at least the general decided, it was time for karaoke. And I'm not a big karaoke singer. And right. I'm looking through all the, and most of the titles are Russian, you know, in Russian language, they're right. Russian songs, they're Russian singers. And I'm thinking, I don't know anything. And the only thing that I could recognize was Aha's Take on Me was the only song. Now, Robbie, you have singing experience. You know that, you know, certain people have a range of how high their voice can go and how low. And the lead singer of Aha, I guess he's Norwegian.
That's a high song.
Oh my God. He has the notes that he hits on there, you know, they're audible to dogs only. I feel like it's so high. And so they put the song on, and I kept telling the general, look, I really don't sing. He's like, but why? You must do this. This is what we do after dinner. You know, I'm like, oh, please. Can I just pass? He's no, you will not pass. You will sing. And I'm like,
you will sing.
Yeah, you will. Yeah, if you exactly, if you don't sing, I will make Igor make you sing. And I'm like, nah. I'm looking over at the guards and everything going, no, okay, I'll sing. So I started singing this, and it was so bad. It was so bad. And I'm kind of looking over at the general, and in his mind, he's thinking, I should not have asked him to sing.
Yes, they regretted that.
I made
after.
A very big mistake. I should not have done that. So, they
That's regretted funny.
After that. So, all right, that was my non sequitur story for
now. Okay.
We see the clarinet. And honestly, at this point, they never said to me that I was going to be playing the clarinet. They just always said Harry was in the Starfleet, you know, Starfleet Academy Youth Symphony or whatever. And so you see the clarinet there. And I thought, okay, this will just be something that we see and we know about Harry, but we're never going to see it in action. But then later,
yes, we did.
They made me play it.
Yes, we did.
Damn it.
Yeah. By the way, so you said it, you go to the laptop, you start looking through the crew manifest, another kind of time transition. You're getting through the crew, and then you don't see Tom Paris. And you're like, Tom, where's Tom?
Where's Tom?
I was like, yes, I'm the key. I'm going to be the key master. I'm going to help him get back. I was so excited. And you know what? It wasn't Danny Bird helping you. It was Tom Paris. So, yeah.
I would like to redo what I just said. I just realized. I just realized this is not the first time that we see the clarinet. This is actually the second time that we see the clarinet, because there's that scene. Remember when you were coming into the room and you're like, Harry?
Oh, yeah.
I'm in love with Cass.
That was earlier. So that was before this.
I have to recant what I just said. That recant incorrect.
It then. That recant happens. It. We made 170 some episodes or something.
So I'm sorry, everyone. You know, my brain is a little bit loopy right now.
Mixing
so
up episodes. I do that episodes. All the time.
I'd mixed up episodes.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay. All right. So I also got to say, she comes over. She's like, Harry, what are you doing? Yeah. And then you decide to spill your guts. And you're like, yeah. I don't belong here.
Yeah.
I don't belong. And I'm like, dude, you just finally had sex with her. And now you're going, but I'm out. I gotta go. I'm breaking up with you. Basically, you're saying like, I'm breaking up with you.
Right.
You know, your game, Harry's game. I just got to say, Harry has no game whatsoever.
When you were just saying your game, you kind of stopped yourself and it sounded like you said you're gay.
No,
Harry is gay.
Harry's game. Definitely he gay. Has no game with the ladies.
He has no
like,
game.
You can't just like, you know, have a Google, have a little Google in the sheets, what? And then get up in the middle of the night and go, you know what? I don't belong here. I got to get out of here. I was like, dude, you're going to break her heart.
So I'm watching that particular scene. And then that funny bit comes up whereas I've got to go to Marseille. I've got to see Paris. She's like, wait, I thought you said Marseille. Oh, it's a long story. And right when that happened, Megan goes, see, there you go. Running off to Robbie again. Like that's you always run to Robbie, that's to so Tom funny. Paris. I'm like, oh my God.
All right. So you go to Marseille.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, just it starts with an alien walking out the door and you're coming in. Mm. And the alien is walking in like slow motion. If you watch the beginning of that scene, it's like the alien, he's kind of walking really. I don't understand. Again, I was like,
here you are catching random stuff like that.
There was like probably some shot, and they said to the person, the extra who was an alien, like, hey, walk a little slower. You have to walk much slower because the camera's moving. Or I don't know what they said, but whatever he was doing was not natural unless that particular alien is like a turtle.
You know super what? Slow. I guarantee you David Livingston was sitting there going, oh my God, I love this alien makeup. Oh my God, we can barely see you. We can barely see you. It doesn't even read on camera. You got to go slow. You got to walk really, really slow.
It was slow. It was super slow. I'm like, why is he walking so slow? And why is Tom Paris so angry?
You're angry and you're just sort of just disheveled. And, you know, you don't have as much facial hair as you have now. You did have some growth, though. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. And yeah, I did, for sure.
I remember in a later episode that we filmed together called The Shoot. That's a big Tom and Harry episode that we will review in the future. We were trapped in that alien prison ship. And I remember the production telling me, hey, so you guys have been in that ship for a while. So we need to have like some facial hair, some facial growth. So, you know,
don't shave.
Yeah. So don't shave. And I said, guys, you got to understand I'm Asian. Okay. This is going to take me forever. Like if you want me not to shave.
Yeah. 3-4 months. What do you got? Yeah,
exactly. I go, if you can't,
didn't shave very, I mean, I don't shave much at all. Now I keep a little beard, but
yeah,
I mean, I could go 5-6 days without shaving and people would hardly notice because
my
facial hair was so light. It's darker now and it's
okay.
And this is not gray. This is blonde here on my chin. No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
To other people, it may be gray, but to me, I'm going to call it blonde.
Okay. It's a different type of blonde, but yeah.
Yes, it's a grayer blonde.
It's a grayer blonde. It's a more silvery blonde.
Yes.
But I just remember feeling sort of envious of everyone being able to just grow a beard or have a little extra growth. I remember feeling like, oh man, I can't do that. So they did tell you for this episode, just don't shave it, obviously, when I see you in Sandrine's. When you say those lines, I always remember the, like, I don't remember any of your lines except for this one episode and in this year when you look at me and you go, "What do you see, Ensign?" Like that. You say that line, and I remember that because when we were watching it, before you even said it, I said it, right? And Megan looks at me and she's
"That's
like,
funny.
You memorized his line." I go, "No, that's just, I always remember that line whenever I say
so
my
weird."
Thing. He turns to me and he goes like, "What do you see, Ensign?" It's like this angry guy.
Yeah.
Angry, right?
Well, he was also drunk.
Yes, that's probably what it is.
He was drunk because I got to say, the punch that I throw to you is like a drunk punch. It's like, oh yeah, I'm going to wind up for a second and I'm going to miss and you're going to throw me on the table.
Yes.
So it was, you know, and then he goes back for another drink. So I think I was playing him his sort of fast turns, you know, that sort of like alcohol infused sort of switching gears, you know, from one mood to the next. And
I thought you were channeling from that scene where you slapped the doctor so kind of lamely, you know, like maybe that was that what was happening. But
yeah, it was definitely a drunk sort of punch.
Okay.
You took me down and it was just pathetic. Yeah. He was just pathetic.
Yeah. I wasn't thinking that that it was a bad punch. And I did realize you're out of it. You're kind of drunk. So it kind of made sense, I guess.
When I first saw the scene, when I first stepped in, I said, "Excuse me, I'm lining up a shot here or something." And then I immediately go, I look at the table, and then I move the cue ball. And my first thought was like, "What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Move a cue ball." Yeah, in a game. And then I realized, oh, as the scene progressed, I was like, oh, he's just practicing shots or whatever.
He's practicing.
But coming off of the line of like, I'm lining up a shot to get you out of my way, it seems like I wouldn't move the cue ball. That seemed like an odd time to do it. It was just confusing.
Okay, did you catch this? Megan caught this. I didn't catch this. She said, "This is really upsetting me." I'm like, "What?" Paris, it does not use chalk on his pool cue. You've never chalked it up before anything.
No.
So, you know.
I think it was a low stakes kind of practicing. I mean, at first I was like, why am I moving the cue ball? Like, why did I do that? But then I realized, oh, he's just screwing around and playing. And he's drunk.
He's very drunk, right? So he's not, he doesn't know what's going on. But yeah, that was her big note for you. It's like, you didn't use chalk. I don't know why.
And Harry comes in thinking he's going to get help, and Paris doesn't look like he's there to help at all.
No.
So poor Harry's not going to get any help. And then Cosimo is sitting at the bar. So I was like, what's up with that?
That was strange. Why is he there?
Who is this Cosimo guy? Is he a script supervisor? All these questions go through my brain. You go back in San Francisco. Lieutenant Lask is there. Libby, some security guards.
Yeah.
Confronted by that. And I got a question, like, why was Laska, Mark Kiley, my buddy, why did he seem so intent on getting you in trouble? Was he like all of a sudden the hall monitor? Like, it was just weird. I was like,
you're right to make that observation. And for me as an actor, I kind of sensed that too. And I kept thinking, okay, how am I going to, what's the backstory here? And I kept thinking, Laska is secretly in love with Libby. And this is his way of getting Harry out of the way, you know, just to for his own agenda, you know.
Interesting.
That's the way I looked at it. I will say this. Yeah. That day I remember Jennifer Gotti ignored me at craft service. Everywhere we walked past at makeup trailer, the hair trailer.
Is this after the kiss day?
This is after the kiss day. This is the day that we were filming the confrontation where she's standing with Laska. And I realized at that point that she was method. She was using that whole, you know, I'm going to stay in my character the entire day and kind of be mad at you and upset with you and not want to be talking to you and disappointed in you, because that's my general feeling. And I didn't, you know, for me, I've never been that type of actor. I'm sort of me like, neither. I'm gonna joke around with you. I'm gonna laugh until the last possible second where they say action, and then I'm in character. But I'm not gonna take that character off camera to the craft service table and ignore another actor because I'm supposed to be pissed at them that day.
Yeah. Right?
And I'm not trying to be critical and say that's the wrong way, because I do believe certain method actors, when they do that, where they choose to stay in character all day, it keeps them in that groove. Gives them a better performance, right? Because that's how they work. Right. But my personal working style is definitely not that style. And I just remember being very annoyed that I felt like she was literally, every time she saw Mark at craft service, she's like, "Oh, hey, Mark." And she was super nice to him. And then was
jealous.
I got a little jealous of my TV girlfriend talking to my TV buddy, you know? And it was like, why am I getting upset about this? But I did feel a little upset that day. So
you get an ankle bracelet.
Yeah.
They slip an old ankle bracelet, the classic ankle bracelet on you.
Yeah.
And they say, like, if you take this off, you're in big trouble.
Yes.
So you're out on the street, take that ankle bracelet out on the street, run into Cosimo again.
Right.
And he comes clean.
He does.
And he's like, okay, you went into this slipstream, this time stream. But I have a question. Did those aliens create this time stream?
No, these time streams they're pre-existing time streams, from what I understand.
But do we ever run into a time stream like this again? Or is this so rare that you just happen to do this one time?
Okay. Yeah, this is the only time in the entire history of the show that we've run into this time stream, as far as
That's what I thought.
That scene with Cosimo, though, it was so, I remember when we were filming that, it was so bright. The way he was sitting, the sun wasn't in his eyes. The way I was sitting, my coverage, the sun was in my eyes.
And yeah.
They obviously, they toned it down. Like, it doesn't look like it's that bright, but it was bright. I remember that going, Jesus, I need sunglasses, but you can't say that.
There's a trick I learned years ago that when you're doing a scene in the bright sun, that as they're slating and getting ready to roll, you close your eyes and you face the sun.
Okay.
And somehow that sun... your eyes relax, but at the same time, they're getting used to the sun, I guess. And then right before they say action, you turn and you look at the actor and start going. And it would definitely help, because otherwise you're just constant. I'm constantly glaring and kind of squinting. And so that's a good trick that I used to do.
That reminds me of like photographers when they're dealing with subjects that keep blinking, and where they'll say, keep your eyes closed. And then when I say ready, open them. And then the photographer takes a picture and their eyes are open. Mm-hmm. But in that case, I'm really acclimating my eyes to the sun by looking up at the sun.
Yeah. Like safely.
My eyes closed, safely. Yep.
Yeah.
Feeling it and then coming into the scene and go. Yeah. I mean, that would have been, if you were there that day,
I would have given you that little tidbit.
Damn it. Where were you? You're probably at home.
Chilling. I was in Marseille getting drunk.
You were in Marseille. Hey, why is that security anklet that big? Wouldn't you think that in the future it would be much more streamlined and much more, but not even, it shouldn't even be an anklet. It should just be some type of like little something that they put subcutaneously underneath your
skin. Yeah, they should just inject you with something.
They should have just chipped me, like you chip a dog and everything to your pet. That's what should have happened.
I think sometimes with props and things like that, they want it to be the iconic for the audience, the iconic sort of, I get it. So the audience understands.
Right.
By the way, so Cosimo explains the time stream and everything.
Yeah.
But I started thinking, all right, if he's an alien, why is he here? Just for this?
Yeah. He says in the scene, he says, I'm here to watch over you. You know, I'm here to make sure that things go okay.
Yeah. I wish that we had seen some, like, if he had phased in and out of his alien form, or if we had seen like his eyes blink at some point and seen an alien. Like, it just seemed like he had been there because he had a relationship with you. So in that timeline, he had been there a long time.
Yeah.
Which means he would have had to go back in time. It was confusing to me. These time stories are always confusing because if they had seen you going into the time stream, and at that moment where you went into the time stream, you woke up in bed and he had followed you at that same time stream, he would have had to go back before. Do you know what I mean? It's very confusing. It's confusing. And then the fact that he's an alien, but he looks like a guy from, you know, Sicily. to me. I was like, I want to see his alien parts a little, like flash him or something. Something about him is a little weird.
Yeah.
I wish we'd seen that.
Again, I think a lot of times when we've been talking about these episodes, when we talk about, God, I wish we would have seen this, or I wish we would have seen that. It's usually, again, we end up being victims of that 42-minute time constraint, you know, with the commercials. And it's tough because when he came clean to me, when Cosimo tells me, yep, we're the time stream aliens, it was so easily handed over that information. It was just like, okay, here it is. You know,
well, he didn't take the time to show you how to use that coin again.
No, he just hands me
this thing. Here's this thing. Good luck. You're going to need it.
It's alien technology.
How do I use this alien coin? I don't know what to do with this.
No clue. So there's a lot of holes in the script when you're dealing with that. And I felt, I don't know if you felt this, but I felt like there was a lot of dialogue that we had to get out. And that we had to go, you know, at light speed in terms of our delivery of our lines in a way, like when we were in the shuttle later and just other times.
Yeah, there was a lot of pretty fast paced.
Oh my God. It was just going and going and going. Speaking of dialogue, I just saw on Bob Picardo's YouTube channel. I had a conversation with him. He sent me a link to a video that he did, and it's of him speaking technobabble from a specific episode.
And
he does a 360 camera move, right? He spins while he's doing it. Okay, so that was inspired by us.
That's cool.
He said to me, he's like, well, you know, Garrett, after you had me as a guest on Delta Flyers, and I had to do research on the different episodes you told me to, and I got the idea of actually doing this. So you guys inspired me to do this segment on your YouTube channel. So I thought that was kind of cool. So
it was very cool. Mm-hmm. It was very cool. Last thing with Cosimo before you leave, he says, and if you don't decide to go back, I'll see you here tomorrow for a Vulcan mocha. What is a Vulcan mocha?
Yeah.
Have you had it before?
I've never had it before. While we were watching, Megan actually Googled Vulcan. There is a company that sells Vulcan mocha as we speak, that you can purchase. But obviously it's some type of Vulcan, you know, caffeine-based drink. Wow. But that's evidently Harry's favorite drink, Vulcan mocha, extra sweet. So but we don't ever hear of Harry talking about that in the current timeline, right?
So I know.
He never says.
Well, that's because Neelix is cooking all the food and he doesn't make a very good Vulcan mocha. So
it's a Leola mocha.
A Leola root mocha. So you're breaking out of your ankle bracelet.
Yeah.
Libby catches you breaking out of the ankle bracelet.
Yeah.
Which I think is a very rebellious move on
it
your
is.
Part. Very
it
proud
is.
Of you. As a rebel myself, I'm very proud.
Oh, okay.
Very, very proud.
All right.
We learned that you met her when you were sitting in the wrong seat at the Qatarian Music Festival.
Music Festival, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question for you. At the Qatarian Music Festival, what kind of music is that Harry likes?
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Yeah, inquiring minds want to know.
Is it like EDM? Is it like like classical? What kind of music festival were you at where you met Libby? I'm going to go with an EDM kind of vibe.
Okay, if it's an EDM vibe, Qatarian is obviously in reference to some type of planet, right? Or some type of people. Yeah. I just kept thinking this entire planet are just bald head middle-aged men that look like Moby, the DJ. It's just like all of them they all look like Moby there, and this is Qatarian music. So maybe.
Okay. All right.
I'll go with that.
It can be whatever you want it to be.
Yeah. Did it bother you that I escaped through the window? And all that Libby has to do to stop those guys from chasing me is just this. She just shuts the window and just turns around and goes, sorry, like that. But of course they add in,
wah, wah,
you know, wah, wah. But you know, I bet you when they were looking at that, I bet you David Livingston was looking at the dailies going, wait a minute, how is this? Oh gosh. And so in post, you hear that sound that they added in. It's when she shuts the window, it goes, you hear this chirp like it's
locking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't chase me that route. They go the other way.
It was good.
My stunt double for the first time was a gentleman by the name of Al Goto, G-O-T-O. Mm-hmm. Really nice guy. Dennis Madlone made a kind of a punny joke, I remember, because we couldn't find Al for some reason. He was nowhere to craft be seen on set. Yeah, well, I go, where is he? And then Matt Alone, the stunt coordinator, goes, Algoto got to go to the bathroom or something like that. I said, I was like, yeah, you're so funny, Dennis.
Nice, Dennis.
But this is the day that I actually realized that stunt doubles are there to do the stunt. And if you choose as an actor to do the stunt yourself, no matter how minimal the stunt may be, you are now literally taking residual money out of that stunt performer's kids' mouths. You know,
right.
Does that make sense? I mean, you're taking his residual payment, because evidently, at least that's how it was back then, they have to actually perform the stunt to get the residual payment.
Yes.
And he didn't say anything because, you know, he didn't say anything, but I was told later by somebody like, hey, that scene where you come out of the fire escape and you just, the ladder comes down and you jump off the last two steps, that was supposed to be done by Al. But I said to Dennis, I was like, I'm gonna do this myself. And Dennis was like, yeah, but nah, I'd rather Al. I go, no, I'm good. So I kind of forced my way in saying that I'm going to do my own stunt. Right. And the minute I did that, little did I know that now, you know,
did he do any stunts in it?
Or he did. He did the scene where the guy tackles me on the ground like that.
That's all he needs is one scene. He doesn't need all of it. Yeah. He gets paid a flat residual, but if he didn't do any stunts, like if they show up, then they only get paid the day rate and they won't get any kind of residuals on the back. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
So as long as he did something in the episode somewhere.
Okay.
He'll get it.
Yeah. Perfect. So all of you aspiring actors out there, let your stunt person do at least one stunt.
The other way that stunt players get paid is there's certain bumps that they get for different kinds of stunts. Like if they're near fire or if they have to take a fall, they get paid more money for the danger and the risk that they put themselves in.
Right.
But I don't think that any of the typical stuff that you were doing in that chase scene would have been a bump. You know,
okay.
He wasn't falling off a rooftop. He wasn't, you know, driving a car that crashes or something.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah. Well, if you ever look at car commercials, by the way, although I think the rules have changed, but it used to be in a car commercial, the person driving the car got residuals. And so the car companies realized, oh, well, we should just tint the windows so you can't see the actors. And then we don't have to pay residuals. So, because they don't appear technically. So if you look at nowadays, I think they've changed it. In the old days, like, yeah, it was big residuals. If you were in a car commercial, just driving a car down the highway, as long as you could be seen, you got a residual. So they tinted all the windows dark back in the day. Yeah.
Those sneaky productions.
They're saving the money.
They're not going to show the person driving. God, it's so classic. Hey, when we beam out of the office, the quick emergency beam out, why do you leave your phaser? Do you remember that? Like the beam out happens and the guards run behind there and all that's left is your phaser that's just sitting on the ground.
It's very strange.
Bizarre. I don't know why. When we're in the ship, the shuttle, the runabout, and
I like that shuttle. I wish we had a shuttle. Yeah.
Better than our normal shuttle for sure.
Just bigger, just more room to move around, more
so
shots.
Roomy. It's sort of like the RV of shuttles in a way.
Yes, it is. Love an RV.
Yes. So then, you know, warp core is about to breach. And I talk about there's going to be, in 15 seconds, this ship is going to blow up. And anytime I watch a movie or a TV show where someone makes a number statement of a certain number of, and then this is going to happen, I always literally count at that point, right? So I went through it and I went 15, 50, 14, 13. When I got to one, we weren't there yet. No, it was another like 7 seconds, actually. So it was like, you can't.
But the most important is that Tom Paris is the ultimate hero because he sacrifices himself.
You really did. Because if you think of it, you don't even know me from Adam, right? No. I mean, I could be making this crap up. I could be completely just Looney Tunes. And I'm like, hey, I know you from Voyager.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? But you went out, you risked it. You're like, okay.
I did.
You know,
I did. So
I have to thank you for that.
Yeah.
You didn't do that.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah. You You punch the guy, you knock the guy out, save the day. Everything
again, was, Tom Paris being the hero that he is, he can't help it. Yep. He doesn't get the credit he deserves.
Megan also made another comment that was interesting. She goes, sometimes when Robbie speaks on Voyager, he sings his line. And I thought, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Like you were on the bridge and you said something and it did come off a little... You're like this old like crooner. Jazz crooner, exactly. Yeah. Yes, man.
Speaking of the bridge, when Harry walks on the bridge, he's got a little swagger in his step. There. He's like,
yes, there was a little pep in the step.
I saw that too.
And to go rewind a little bit before that moment, when I'm in the regular shuttle and you guys are trying to beam me out. And there's another countdown there. And I counted those seconds to that warp core breaching, that shuttle.
And again, wrong.
And again, wrong, off by another 4 seconds there. And I was just sitting there just thinking, God dang it. You know, I want my TV. I want my entertainment to be
real.
To be real time. That's how much is that to ask for something as basic as that? You know, come on, guys.
I have a question. Yeah. Actually, this is Rebecca's question. So you walk down with your swagger on the bridge. Come over. Kind of staring at Tom Paris, a little awkwardly, in my opinion. And you say, I owe you one. Now, Rebecca's question was, does he still owe you one? Did he ever give you one? So, yeah, my question is, do you still owe me one? Did you ever give me one? I don't think so.
I don't think I ever gave you one, but I don't
think
know.
You if did.
I don't think I. Okay. I don't think I necessarily still owe you one because I.
No, you don't owe me one.
Because you don't owe me one. I saved. No, I okay. I repaid you. I repaid your favor in this episode later in the shoot in that episode.
Okay.
Okay. So
fair.
I gave you one. I gave you one later.
Okay. I'm glad we figured out what that one is.
Oh, so perfect of Rebecca to ask that question. Yeah. That's such a Rebecca question, too. I love it. That's so good. All right. So, Robbie, we're at that point in the show. We sort of talk about the meaning behind the show or the underlying message that you can get from this show to be a better human being. What would you say?
I would say, for non sequitur, that the theme or the big idea behind it is that we have a destiny. All of us kind of have a destiny, even if circumstances or things come up that might want to alter our course, that there's sort of a purpose that we have that can't be stopped. And there's a deeper purpose. And for me, like in this episode, Harry Kim has a purpose to be on Voyager, to be there. He knows that's his purpose. The universe knows that's his purpose, and this little accident has thrown him off. And even Tom Paris, the other Tom Paris we meet in the wrong timeline, can sense that that's his purpose and helps him get there. And so I think that knowing that we all have sort of a purpose and that we may get off track now and then, but we're going to find our way back if we're true and if we're connected to our purpose, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be my theme, my underlying meaning and message. Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What about you?
For me, I really, it's similar to what you just said. But for me, it really kind of resonated George Bailey's character from It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm.
If you remember, like at one point he's like, you know, I wish I was never born. And then the angel snaps his fingers. And then now he sees how many people his life or his existence touched, you know what I'm saying? Or affected. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of people that he affected. And in reality, you see that the Tom Paris that in this episode is definitely not the Tom Paris from Voyager. But that's because Harry and Tom didn't interact.
Yeah.
Cork's bar, you know what I'm saying? So it's sort of, it's sort of like Harry's a bit of the George Bailey character here. You know, you get to see your life when you were not, you know, part of that life in a way. So I always kind of felt shades of It's a Wonderful Life when I watched it.
That's interesting.
And I think that I guess the underlying message for people is just to realize that everyone is important. Doesn't matter what you think. You may think, oh my gosh, you know, if I just vanished, nobody would care. Like if I just disappeared or if I just died, who cares? Well, a lot of people care, and people, and in ways that you don't even expect or even think about, you touch other people's lives, you know? Yeah. So it's very important to remember that everyone has worth, self-worth. So really an episode of knowing your worth and knowing that you touch many lives on many levels that you don't even know.
Every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
That's right. Every time a bell rings,
an angel gets his wings.
I love that. See, you're so quick on pulling that up on your phone.
What is the angel gets his wings moment for you from this episode? Is there like a something that happened in the episode that like Harry?
You got your wings when you jumped in and sacrificed yourself. That was your angel getting that was you getting your wings for sure, right?
Yeah.
And again, Harry, same thing. I mean, Harry took a leap of faith. He was like, "Look, just transport me off the." There was no coordinates for you to transport me. You were like, what? You want to be beamed off of this shuttle into nowhere?
Space.
To oblivion? Yeah. So we both got our wings by sacrificing our lives, basically.
Yeah.
Right?
Nice.
Yeah?
Right. I like it.
I like that too, man. We should probably make mention of what we will be covering next week.
Yes.
Yeah, that would help.
There's more. Do not fear, brave audience. There will be more of this amazing entertainment.
Okay.
Coming your way. We have so much more to give.
So we...
whether you want it or not.
Well, thank you again, Robbie, for this week's discussion.
Thank you. Thank Great
everyone.
Episode.
Yep. Thank you, everyone, for listening in to our discussion of Non Sequitur. And stay tuned next week when we review Twisted.
Twisted.
Twisted. Twisted. Twisted. Twisted.
Twisted.